Welcome to Steppin' Out, a reality radio show where you'll hear real people sharing their true stories of what it was like to go over the edge and find their way back. And now, Steppin' Out.
And we're back. You are listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out. Once again, if you want to connect with us here at the show, we would love to hear from you. You can visit us online 24 hours a day at our website at www.steppinoutradio.com. Also, you can visit us if you want to connect with the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, you can visit them at www.aa.org. Next up, we have Eric. Eric, how you doing, man?
Hi.
What's going on?
At a radio station.
You are at a radio station. Like, what the hell happened here? Tell us a little bit about what your drinking career was like and what kind of brought you into recovery to ask for help.
All right. My first real drink was when I was 18. I mean, it was the drink that I really embraced and chased for until I was 29. It was on a cruise through the Caribbean.
Okay.
And I was with my father and my brother, and my grandparents wanted my father and my brother to get closer together, and I wanted nothing like that to happen. You know, I wanted to do my own thing and have fun while I was there, and one of the things I could do to aggravate my father was to drink while I was on the ship. And I was 18. I wasn't allowed to drink in the States, but I could drink on the ship.
Did it work?
It worked awesome.
Like, yeah.
As soon as I was at a club on the ship, and I had a drink at the club, and all of a sudden I felt like a part of, and I realized how expensive it was. So I went right from there to the liquor store on the ship, and I bought a bottle of Absolut vodka.
Nice.
And I started right off the bat drinking vodka straight. I mean, that's right where I started.
That's
that was
where
my
you
first
started.
Drunk.
Wow. And you just went like right for a fifth of vodka.
It was a giant bottle. It was a big bottle.
It's a lot of vodka.
Yeah, I'm an all or nothing kind of guy.
Okay,
and,
all right.
Like, it was like amazing to the Russian staff that was on the ship, you know, that I was drinking this vodka straight. The girls were like, I can't believe you're drinking that vodka straight. The kids that were my
you're
age.
You just like
were,
wandering the ship with a bottle of vodka?
I was. I was totally.
That must have went over well. Dad must have been proud.
Yeah, he was really happy. I think he's still recovering from that
is
experience.
He,
But, you know, like I really did drink straight that whole week, the whole time I was there, and I saw the most beautiful places I'd ever seen in the Caribbean, and I'd never experienced anything like it in my life. And it was like I didn't have one hangover. I didn't have one regret the whole week, and it wasn't until that cruise was over and we're sitting in the airport that I had my first hangover, and I felt like I was crying, or I was, you know, I was crying. I don't quite remember, but it was the most scary feeling to, like, wonder how I was going to recreate this. I was missing all of it. For the first time in my life, I could socialize with people. I could play the games on the ship. I could have all this fun, and I never felt like I could have fun with other people. I was completely isolated in the way that I grew up. I didn't interact with other people well at all.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got back, I mean, my number one goal was to find someone that would be old enough to buy me alcohol. And at this point, I would started my own business as soon as I got out of high school. I was only 18 at this point, and I'd been in business for probably half a year or so.
Okay.
Had brand new cars, had my own apartment, got somebody to move in with me in this apartment that could buy alcohol. And I had I've got a videotape of a bottle of Yukon Jack and a bottle of vodka sitting on my counter. And I just proceeded to get all of my friends as trashed as I could and expose as many people to this awesome thing that I'd found. Much to the regret of their parents and the religious upbringing that I had had and
wow.
Their view on drunkenness. So, you know, I went through, I was miserable my whole childhood, and this was like the first experience of pleasure that I had. That and starting my own business, because my father had worked in a factory, and just I always felt like, you know, he
right.
hated his life because of certain decisions, and I was not going to let those decisions happen to me. And, you know, I bought brand new cars and all that stuff, like I said, and it felt good for like a half a year or something. This drinking thing like went good for like maybe 6 months, a year or something, and started getting in trouble. And, you know, people started not being allowed to hang out with me or go over my apartment. And I wasn't even drinking age yet. And, you know, and eventually the group of people that I hung out with kept digressing to, you know, less wholesome activities. And, you know, I started smoking pot and, you know, I ended up doing stuff like acid and, you know, I always was chasing something to try and make myself feel better, to feel whole.
Sure.
You know, I never felt normal. And, you know, I'd been diagnosed in school with ADD, and I'd been told by counselors and stuff that I was emotionally retarded, like at the elementary school level, and I was always a disciplinary problem. But, you know, like I could say that that first year from 18 to 19 was pretty decent, mm-hmm. but then it just like I was always trying to have a relationship too. It also follows relationship with me. I always wanted a girlfriend, and yet it always seemed to elude me. And the drinking was the first thing that seemed to connect this together for me, like correctly. And so I would chase these relationships as well.
Okay.
And they would last for a short period of time. This one, I'd always pick situations that were impossible. And parents did not want me dating their daughter and stuff like that. And I would go after that situation. I eloped with this girl. We got married eventually. Well, like, I ran off and eloped, I guess, is married, right?
Yeah, so I thought so in most states.
We lived together for a little bit. And then she was younger than I. And at this time, I'm like drinking age. We would go to a restaurant, and you know, I'd get her served, and she'd get totally plastered to make a fool out of herself. And all my friends, when I would hang out with them, they would get totally plastered to make fools out of themselves. They'd piss their pants. They'd fall downstairs. They'd tell their friends stuff they would never tell them. And for me, alcohol was like a suit of armor. It was like everything I ever wanted to be. It was like, I could not believe how they acted when they were drunk. And I just thought, like, man. And people would say, man, you are drinking all the time. You're drinking nonstop. You're going to become an alcoholic. And I was like, I'll worry about that when I become an alcoholic. I'm not going to stop having a good time right now. I'm not going to, like, not drink because I might become an alcoholic. I'm not worried about that. And I really had no consequences for my drinking.
Sure.
And everybody that I hung out with was having consequences for their drinking, and it kept me from ever looking at that.
I mean, it was just, I mean, what do you mean you had no consequences? Physical consequences? You weren't still experiencing hangovers or anything like that? I mean,
the hangovers were like what I get from a hard day's work and bringing in a lot of money. It was like, you do what you got to do to get what you got to get.
Just par for the course. So you were just shaking them off, but you weren't having any kind of loss of no material loss, no.
Nope.
I was
such an in your face kind of person that, I didn't change when I got drunk. And
okay.
Most of what happened is occasionally I'd do the wrong combination and I'd throw up somewhere or, you know, I'd pass out somewhere.
Mm.
And I could live with that for what it was giving me. It was giving me something inside where I felt like I was a part of something for the first time in my life.
Right. I gotcha.
You know, I can take that story for a while, you know, because it did seem to work for a while and it told me it was working for a while. But, I mean, what really happened to me was I did not know how to wake up in the morning eventually. I did not know how to step outside my door. I didn't know how to do anything without having something in my body to intoxicate me.
Talk about that.
Well, the restaurant scene, going to restaurants and having my wife get all drunk and everything and make a fool out of us at the restaurant and then, you know, chasing the car down the road, that sort of stuff, got me fat because I was eating a lot of filet mignons and everything. I was starting to get pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother at the time was going to clubs in New York City. He was doing ecstasy and, you know, doing a lot of stuff, you know, like Special K and cocaine and things like that. And that seemed to be less calorie intake and seemed to be more exciting than the dead end that I was hitting at this restaurant scene trying to play, you know, high class kind of entertainment.
Sure.
So we started going to these clubs in New York City and spending the entire weekend in clubs, you know, like the Tunnel or the Limelight or Club USA, which mm-hmm. was unbelievable. Sodom and Gomorrah for a guy from the country. I came from a very rural part of New Jersey. And, you know, I lost that marriage to a bunch of loose conduct and, you know, doing a lot of heavy drugs in this city.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, came back a very lonely person to, you know, the rural parts of New Jersey. And, you know, suicidal, lost that wife to my best friend at the time. And, you know, didn't know what to do. And I knew that the club scene was no good for me. I knew New York City was killing me. And I never looked at alcohol. I never thought of alcohol for a second. That was like my vitamin C. That was the best thing that anybody had ever shown me up to
this point. Can't be that.
No way.
Right.
And, you know, so I proceeded to, you know, start to have consequences for my drinking.
Like what? What was the first thing you saw?
Well, I mean, not that I wasn't drinking when I was doing the stuff at the clubs either, because they would tell me it would be better
mm-hmm.
if I didn't drink. And I would drink anyway. I couldn't not drink. But, you know, I was having physical side effects. Like I had like a god-awful case of hemorrhoids where I had to go to a doctor and get them cut off of my...
There's something we don't hear every
yeah.
day.
Yeah.
Yeah? No kidding. That's a first for the show. I was already being to tell me you were throwing up on yourself or, you know, I just wasn't banking on hemorrhoids. I'm sorry. All right. Well, hey, you know, I mean, that's a pain in the ass, but, you know. So what else?
That was definitely... made me realize that I was out of control because I could not stop drinking and drugging for me to even get through that process. So that was like a terrible mess, being constipated after having a hemorrhoid operation.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
How did we get here?
It's a dirty place.
Okay. All right. Well, what else? I mean, like, aside from the physical stuff, I mean, what else was going on with you?
I probably got pulled over a couple of times, you know, where it was questionable what I was doing. But because I was in business in my town and I was a pretty reputable guy and I was keeping it up on the exterior, I would be able to talk myself out of these situations. I stopped going to the clubs in the city, though, and I stayed in the country. And then I just got suicidal.
I got you. All right. Well, sit tight. No pun intended. All right. We'll be right back. You're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew. This is Stepping Out. 24, only been with one man. What happened to her plan? She was going to be an actress. She was going to be a star. She was going to shake her ass on the hood of White Snake's car. Her yellow SUV is now the Welcome back. You are listening to America's 12 Steps Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Stepping Out. Once again, if you want to say hi to us here at the show, you can visit us on our website 24 hours a day at www.steppingoutradio.com. On the site, you can sign up for our free newsletter. You can also shoot us an email. We'd love to hear your feedback. Please do visit us at www.steppingoutradio.com. Also, if you or someone you know needs help with their alcohol intake, a resource online for that would be www.aa.org, or just pick up your local phone book and look under Alcoholics Anonymous. And in case you just joined us, we're speaking with Eric. Eric, you know, it sounded like you were a late bloomer. I mean, late, relatively speaking. You know, you went straight to a fifth of vodka. You bypass sipping beers. You bypass, and then you know things get really wacky for you. You're not really experiencing any kind of downside. Your friends are starting to experience some downside, but for you, you're kind of like you're hanging tough. But then all of a sudden, it started to turn on you. You started having some physical problems, and you know it didn't seem like it was working. And then it wasn't, right?
Right.
And what happened?
Well, after, I thought it was the club scene in New York City that was the problem, and I was just sort of back out in the country just trying to recuperate my life. I was, again, single. I had actually my dog, which was about a year old at the time, and I thought he was really, you know, going to save me. I was going to, you know, always had something that was going to save me. He was just getting trained. He was really cool, and I decided to get screwed up one more time and accidentally left the door open, and he got hit by a car, and he was dying. I had to carry him in. I had a lot of stuff like that, just one thing after another. It was like something was just trying to kill me, and I would look at these guys that worked for me, and I was still doing work. I mean, everything I was doing was with the goal to accomplish more in my life. I wasn't just trying to check out. I was trying to accomplish more than anybody around me had accomplished. And I wasn't doing what I wanted to get done, that's for sure. And these kids that started working for me were doing heroin. And it was always a series of judgments for me. Like, I would look at people and be like, I would never do that. I would never do that. And one of the things, you know, that I was never going to do was heroin. And these kids would, you know, spend $10, lay around all day long. And I'd be like, you know, what would you want to do that for? Let's work. Let's make some money. Let's, you know, if you really love that drug that much, make some more money with it. So eventually, like, you know, I became the drunk that I didn't want to be, and then I used substances I didn't want to, like heroin, and you know, but I would use everything with the idea of controlling myself with it. Like, I would stay up till 4 o'clock in the morning. Not only was I working on my business, but I lived on a farm and had like 150 chickens. I'm running chickens. I've got 7 show goats. I've got 20 rabbits that run around loose in the woods. You know, I've got cats.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I was very hyperactive thinking, and it took a lot. I
mean, okay.
You know what? The animals were grasping my childhood because we had animals when I was a kid, and that was the one moment of happiness I remember as a child. And I was trying to recreate everything that ever made me happy. I tried to recreate, and I would use this stuff and go do my work and everything, and totally look sober. Nobody. My parents didn't know what was going on. Like, nobody knew what was going on. I ended up with a $200 a day addiction, just trying to stay alive. I mean, it got to the point.
I mean, were you shooting dope? Were you snorting dope? What was it?
I used the needle once, just to say that I did, more ego stuff. But
yeah.
I mean, I was really snorting it.
How much is that? How much physical? I don't know what $200 buys in the street, but what are we talking about? How much is that?
I would get a bundle of heroin a day, and then I would do cocaine with it to keep me awake.
Okay. And you were drinking alongside of this?
Yeah, drinking. You know, but that was the one time I could control my drinking, though, actually.
Ain't that funny?
It is possible to control your drinking.
If you want to do lethal amounts of heroin and cocaine, you can get your drinking under wraps. Okay. And so what happened next?
The thing about it was I was doing that amount each day just to wake up and not want to kill myself. This wasn't even like I was enjoying myself. I wasn't feeling like I was accomplishing anything. It stopped working. I was becoming immune to everything that I was trying to use to escape, you know, what I thought was reality. And it led me to a point where the only thing I could think to do was to kill myself. And I literally, it was another girl I was going after that was a long shot, you know, which is still a story today. But I thought this person had just started getting screwed up on drugs and everything, and I'm at the point where I'm immune to everything. Nothing's
sure.
making me happy anymore. But if I could show her how happy I was, you know, how happy you could be if you had ecstasy, if you had Special K, if you had acid, if you had vodka, you know, if you had all these things. I had everything you could possibly think of. Spent every dime I had for this smorgasbord. I had flowers, I had candy, all this stuff set up. I had a party at my house, and I had a poem written and all this kind of stuff. And I just, when everybody was at their peak, I came out and like laid my line on this, you know, chick. And unfortunately, I took one hit of acid too many, and I was like, I went to like some deep, dark, terrible place. It was not cool, and I failed miserably. And I got that look like, you psychopath, you're kidding me. Right? That I'm accustomed to, actually. I get that pretty often, but this was like more hardcore than ever.
Oh, sorry, I just got a visual on that. Okay.
This was a terrible look. This is a look like there was not one thing that Eric could think of that was worth living for. There was not one thing that I could possibly fathom.
Right.
I mean, not the God that I grew up with, not my parents, not the law, not anybody I could think of. I had already been on the methadone clinic at this point and detoxed myself off of heroin several times, detoxed myself off of 55 milligrams of methadone, and here I am trying to make it work one more time. And I had stopped doing heroin at this point probably for like a month. This was another relapse for me is what it was, without knowing what AA was at the time or any kind of program of recovery. I just thought I was lost. I thought I had made a choice that was irreversible with my life. And I took lethal doses of everything that I had and was going to finish it off with a bag of heroin, and I never even made it to that bag of heroin. And I just went into some coma state. And somehow out of that, I mean, I did have some sort of spiritual occurrence in my brain where I woke up and my life was completely different. But it eventually led me to a rehab. And when I went to that rehab, for the first time in my life, I saw people that had actually done worse things than me and had been in worse places than I had. And, you know, were actually happy to come in there and talk about their life. I mean, they were happy. I mean, I didn't even know what happiness was, period, let alone, like, get over this crap and then be happy.
Sure.
And it was enough to make me feel like the hand of God had stepped into my life and done something for me, because I didn't know about rehab. I didn't know about anything.
What did you make of that situation? I mean, when you first saw it, aside from, you know, the hand of God, I mean, did you think that there was anything with these people that was a little bit suspect? Did it seem odd to you that this was what, you know, how it was?
No, I had looked in so many different places, including religion and everything, and I had just never thought in a million years that there was any happiness after this. I thought this was where you stepped into hell and you don't come out.
Right.
You know, and
so you're just happy to be there, basically, at that point.
And, I remember, yeah. You know, I had to leave my business, which was more successful at that point due to the $200 a day habit. You have to create quite a career to keep that going.
Right.
And, you know, I was scared to death, and I was crying to my counselors before I left there. I'm like, don't let me go back. I can't handle this. I can't make these choices. I couldn't be in the real world. I owed like $30,000 in debt to personal people and, you know, people that would want to know where that money is. And I was terrified. And I had a brother that was still using that was watching my business while I was in rehab. And actually, while I was in rehab, he got busted with heroin on him as me with my ID. So I had like stuff like that coming to me while I was in rehab. They didn't want to put me in a halfway house. They told me if I went to AA that I would be okay. This was my first time. This is my first time at any kind of shot at recovery, you know, from a program. And I believed them. And they told me, even though I thought, you know, really maybe I was a heroin addict, I believed them when they said that there's rock solid sobriety in AA. And so I tried it. I went and stayed with my mom, who's not an alcoholic. But again, like, alcoholism travels in my family. I found out that, well, I know my mom's grandfather's an alcoholic. I know my mom's brother killed his best friend on his 18th year old birthday because he was drunk driving and crushed his head under the car. Oh. I know that my other uncles used to get in fights all the time. I later found out that I had a great grandfather that died in the streets of Jersey City. You know, so this stuff not necessarily talked about or even looked at or thought about came to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
But, I came out, went to my mom's house, and I went to, like, probably 3 meetings a day. I still thought I was staying sober just maybe to please God, like a preacher, like, you know, goes and feeds starving people in places or whatever. But I found out by relapsing that I'm completely powerless over alcohol or anything that gets me intoxicated. I have no benefit from it ever again. There was nothing in it for me.
Sure.
And I'm so grateful to have 7 years of sobriety now. It was July 13th, 98. My last drink was a bottle of mouthwash. Another thing I said that I would never do. That was pathetic. And I heard about it in the rooms of AA. I didn't even know mouthwash had alcohol in it. You know, so it was another judgment call on my part. Now I don't judge anybody anymore. Anything that any human being does, I believe I am capable of doing it. So I do the next right thing as much as I can. I pray constantly, at least 3 times a day, majorly to my higher power. And I talk everything that I do to very close people in fellowship, and I try to stay as active in service as possible and talk to my sponsor every day and go on radio stations and tell my crazy story.
Tell you crazy stories. Let me tell you something, Eric. You're a miracle, man. Thanks so much for sharing your story with us. Once again, you're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Stepping Out.